From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on March 15th, 2024, from my home here in Columbia, South Carolina. Happy St. Pat's Weekend! In this episode, we look at the $13.2 billion House-approved budget. We also have some primary news as the filing period for elections opens. We also have a bit of an econ pod for ya with the latest economic indicators on inflation, unemployment, and more.
Econ pod.
And Scott Morgan has an extended, in-depth look at built-to-rent housing. The Lead loves hearing from everyone. That's why we have a voicemail box set up at 803-563-7169. We love hearing from you guys. Drop us a message. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, what's new in your world, how things are going. Spring is here. How did you manage the first week of daylight saving time? Let us know, 803-563-7169. Let's start in the State House.
Yes.
The House passed its $13.2 billion version of the state's operating budget on Wednesday. The budget is crafted by the House Ways and Means Committee, which has eight budget subcommittees that oversee things like higher education, economic development, etc. So agencies appear before these subcommittees with their budget requests that they already submitted, but they answer questions from lawmakers, and then their requests get molded into the budget, which gets debated and voted upon like it did on Wednesday.
Wow.
Now, agencies also submit budget requests to the Executive Budget Office, which then informs the creation of the governor's executive budget, which we talk about in January. You know, his blueprint that lawmakers can incorporate into their budget plans or completely disregard. As we've said on this pod before, you see a lot of cooperation between Governor Henry McMaster and the legislature on multiple issues, and the budget is one of them. Say what you want about these budgetary or legislative priorities, there's no doubt that the governor is a team player and leader, L-E-A-D-E-R, and at times with bipartisan support. Now, this will be a defining aspect of McMaster's legacy and maybe one that his successors adapt. I'd cite the famous precedent-setting court case, win versus win. It's a win-win, as they say.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you have context. Maybe you laughed. Maybe you said, hurry up and just say your words.
Thank you.
I have you right where I want you, though, because I'm going to throw numbers and highlights at you, right?
Yes.
So again, this budget, $13.2 billion. There is $777 million in new recurring revenue. That's money that comes back every year because of tax growth. And $896 million in non-recurring one-time dollars. So that $777 million becomes $352 million after you take out money for tax cuts, as well as state employee health care premium increases, Medicaid, school vouchers, DHEC split, blah, blah, blah. All these things that go right off the top. Some of the non-recurring or one-time money is going to those as well. But let's look at what's in the budget. First up, tax relief. $624 million in tax relief, with the bulk of that giving a tax credit for owner-occupied homes. So if you own your home, get ready for some tax relief. Also, the income tax rate ticked down 0.1% because we have extra money to lower it. Teacher recruitment and retention is a major focus as well in this budget. The starting teacher salary was raised by $4,500 to $47,500. There are also salary increases for every step when it comes to educators. All this amid increasing teacher vacancies, fewer teachers in the pipeline, and higher turnover in a still very hot labor market. In higher education, in-state tuition at public colleges and universities remains frozen for a sixth year in a row. There are also tens of millions of dollars for technical college scholarships and training. Again, if you want to completely change careers and say go work for Boeing, Mercedes, or any other manufacturers in the state, go get trained up for free. And don't call me about the Boeing dig, okay, folks? Listen to the engineers and we won't have to make jokes about Boeing, okay? Now, there is money for law enforcement officer step increases and pay raises for state employees as well. When we look at the state employee pay increases, they range from 5% for those making $20,000 or less to 1.5% for those making $66,667 or more. I don't like saying that many sixes, but I did a good job. AT says I did a good job. For 11 years in a row, the state will not increase health insurance premiums for state employees. While there haven't always been pay increases for state employees during those years, premiums have held steady at 2012 levels. Literally, my high-deductible Blue Cross Blue Shield plan is $9 a month, folks. Come work for the state. We got openings and a pension, which, according to budget writers, could be fully funded in 16 years based upon current market performance. There's also $200 million in the budget to continue improving bridges across the state. We talked with retiring SCDOT Secretary Christy Hall on This Week in South Carolina, and I'll share some of that on Tuesday's pod. Now, of course, there's plenty more in that budget, but I don't want to keep you too much longer. And the budget now heads to the Senate Finance Committee, which will be crafting its own version. So, you know, take all this with a grain of salt. We can't imagine it changing too much, but it does change. Now, after the House passed the budget on Wednesday, House Speaker Merle Smith and Ways and Means Chairman Bruce Bannister spoke with the media. Here's Merle, who previously headed the Ways and Means Committee before being elected Speaker in May 2022.
You know, we've seen last year that South Carolina had the highest population growth per capita, and we have been able to manage that growth while also reducing taxes and increasing reserves. So what we have done with this budget is tried to fund core functions of government while also making sure that we can include tax cuts with over $600 million of tax cuts in this budget and increase our reserves. So Chairman Bannister and the Ways and Means Committee and the body overwhelmingly voted for this budget. It's a good budget. It's a budget that is growing South Carolina. We're seeing record population coming to South Carolina. We're seeing record jobs coming to South Carolina. And that's because of the policies that we have enacted over the years. We've had responsible policies that provide for growth of not only the population, but also businesses. And so this budget is representative of that. And we did, and Chairman Bannister and his committee did a great job of having a prudent, fiscally responsible budget.
Bannister, a Greenville Republican, successfully steered his second budget through the House. Bannister said it's always been a balance when it comes to funding needs, and with some extra money, they were able to accelerate teacher pay raises.
Kept our promise to reduce the income tax by that 0.1%. That brings a total of $800 million in this budget in income tax relief for the South Carolina taxpayers. This budget was less than we had last year. We had less money to spend, so the total budget is less, so we didn't grow the budget. It's actually just the nature of the economy is a little bit less than it was. And we kept the recurring growth under that CPI and population growth that we've talked about being a natural limit to what we do. So veterans nursing homes, we got a big investment in taking care of our veterans. Law enforcement, again, it's disappointing to hear people say we're not taking care of law enforcement when Keel would tell you that the investments we made in the state law enforcement agencies has been transformative for this state. And when we do that, all the other municipalities and counties have to follow suit, and they're doing that across the board. Something I'm proud of that we've done in the budget. We continue to invest in infrastructure, another core function of government, $200 million to accelerate the bridge repair and replacement in South Carolina. We've got a lot of bridges that are old. None of those are going to get to the point that they collapse. That's the DOT's commitment to us, and we've made the investment. We've done what they asked us to do by putting the dollars in that they need this coming year to meet those needs.
Before the press gaggle, members of the media were in the House antechamber waiting on Smith and Bannister and House Majority Leader Davey Hyatt. Members of the far-right House Freedom Caucus decided to do a brief gaggle as well and deride much of what was in the budget as not being a core function of state government. While the state budget process was nowhere near as contentious as it was last year, when both Smith and Bannister were new in their roles, there were still floor speeches and amendments put up by Freedom Caucus members to force votes that could be used in a campaign ad coming to you soon.
Fun!
Remember, primary season's almost upon us.
So fun!
Greenville Republican Adam Morgan, who chairs the House Freedom Caucus, said taxes needed to be cut further.
And just because we have 1 year where we're doing pretty well, that doesn't mean we're not going to literally go over with a fine-tooth comb every dollar that we're spending of taxpayer money. I mean, we're literally dumping billions of dollars into all sorts of different programs, and we're going to We're going to debate that. We're going to question when we see wasteful spending. We're going to try to cut it. It makes a lot of Republicans uncomfortable to try to have to answer those hard questions for why we're wasting money on certain programs. I think one of the things you can look at why we're doing that is we have a Democrat committee sub-chair who's the head of Commerce. And, you know, I guess no shock that that's an area where you see a lot of just blatant socialism and trying to play the market and push a lot of things that undermine our values. And I think that goes directly to House leadership. It's time for Republicans and House leadership to wake up and appoint conservatives to the House Ways and Means. Because if you'll notice, there's not a single Freedom Caucus member on there, and yet you have a Democrat sub-chair that's, you know, controlling that, who's one of our biggest opponents. And that directly goes to the battle that's going on in the legislature, really in both chambers. It's time for conservatives to have representation in the budget, and then we might actually get a better product. We won't be wasting as much taxpayer money and constantly increasing the creep of socialism in our state budget.
That was Morgan there talking about Charleston Democrat Leon Stavronakis, who is the Economic Development Subcommittee Chairman. And he was talking about money for economic development incentives, which enjoys bipartisan support in our state house. So kind of a interesting take there. Now, last November, Morgan announced he was primarying 4th District Congressman William Timmons, who was just recently endorsed by former President Donald Trump. The endorsement prompted Timmons to call on Morgan to drop out. Speaking of, we are less than 3 months away from the June 11th primary. Oh, thank God, I need to get back on the campaign trail. I'm trying to fill this campaign trail void in my life, and the State House is not doing it. So that's why we will be focusing heavily on the upcoming primaries for the state's 124 State House of Representative seats, the 46 State Senate seats, and the 7 congressional districts that are all on the ballot this November. Anyways, primaries determine who makes it on the November ballot, unless your elected official faces no intra-party challenge, in which case advance directly to November. If they do have someone challenging them, then they will battle it out in your district up until the June 11th primary, as they are looking to get 50% of the vote plus one. It's a majority. If they don't, then they go into a runoff with the second highest vote getter 2 weeks later. So we are gearing up for the primaries, folks.
Interesting.
Now, the House and congressional reps are up for re-election every 2 years and have already been elected under the new maps that were approved and signed into law on January 2022. Those districts were based on the 2020 census, though the first congressional district map is still under its previous version.
Why?
Pending a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. Still waiting, guys. Filing for all these positions and more opens today at noon if you're listening on Saturday, March 16th, when this pod drops. And filing runs through April 1st at noon. We'll bring you further coverage after filing closes. We have been trickling out some of the folks in the congressional races, and we have another. Mac Defford, an attorney and Coast Guard veteran, is jumping in the first congressional district Democratic primary. Defford is joining former International African American Museum President Michael B. Moore in vying for his party's nomination in June. The winner of the primary will face the winner of the Republican primary, which right now includes incumbent Congresswoman Nancy Mace and former gubernatorial candidate Catherine Templeton. Let's get down to business. A little econ pod action here.
Econ pod.
Pop quiz. How's the economy doing, hotshot?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, here are some indicators for you to talk about when people ask you, how's the economy doing?
Data.
Inflation. It's ticked up by 0.4% in February to an annualized rate of 3.2%. The Federal Reserve Bank continues to look for inflation to slow toward its 2% target rate before it starts lowering interest rates. Economists estimate that that won't start happening until June at the earliest. The Federal Open Market Committee meets next week to discuss rates. Stand by for Chair Powell.
Awesome.
Retail sales for February climbed 0.6%, according to the Commerce Department. Now, if you exclude the more volatile measurements of gasoline and autos, sales rose just 0.3% last month. Commerce notes that spending rose in sales at electronics and appliance stores, restaurants and bars, and gas stations as prices at the pump jumped. Americans pulled back their spending on furniture and home stores, health and personal care stores, and clothing retailers. Tell me what you're buying or not buying at 803-563-7169. Remember, we're consumers. We need to keep the economy going. Now, consumer sentiment dipped ever so slightly. The preliminary University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index reading for March was 76.5. That's lower than February, which was at 76.9, and also below the median estimate. In the release, Surveys of Consumers director Joanne Hsu says that, quote, consumer views have stabilized into a holding pattern. Consumers perceived few signals that the economy is currently improving or deteriorating, quote. And our last economic indicator, South Carolina unemployment. Our unemployment rate for January maintained at 3% after adding 9,200 jobs for the month. Richmond Fed regional economist Laura Ulrich notes that while 3,500 jobs were added in the government sector, it remains the only sector below pre-pandemic levels, but it is now within 1 percentage point of February 2020 levels. One of the only two sectors that lost employment in January was the trade, transportation, and utilities sector that shed 3,100 jobs. Oh, one more indicator for you. The average price for a gallon of gas is $3.21. That is up 17 cents from a month ago, according to AAA. So to recap, inflation is still sticking at 3.2%. Retail sales are up for February. Consumers are neither hot nor cold on the economy. The unemployment rate remains low at 3% in the state. And gas prices are creeping up and are currently at $3.21 a gallon. And now we have this in-depth story on build-to-rent homes. Scott Morgan, who continues to keep an eye on the housing industry, has this story. It's about 11 minutes long, but it really educates you on this new and concerning movement in the housing industry. Take a listen.
Have you ever heard of build-to-rent housing?
If you want to kill middle America, you're going to do it with rental communities.
Joetta Telford and I were actually talking about something else when build-to-rent came up in passing and then hijacked the rest of our conversation. Now, I need to make sure you know up front that Telford, a real estate agent in Rock Hill, is not down on renting a place to live, nor is she down on property owners who rent houses out to tenants. What she's not fond of is the little guy's ability to build wealth through home ownership being undermined by the bottomless pocketbook of gigantic financial investment firms that she worries will gobble up huge tracts of land and cash in on housing no one can buy.
So they're not only making money off of you, but they can take an entire community and borrow against that and build other communities. So if you're talking about basically killing the opportunities for Americans to have the American dream, that's how you do it, is you create renters out of everybody.
Kevin Phillips is equally unromantic about build-to-rent.
Most people's biggest asset is their home. They use that to build generational wealth. I mean, it changes people's lives. And now you're seeing this push by private equity and large, large sums of money coming into communities, building build-to-rent neighborhoods and basically saying that you will own nothing and you will like it.
Phillips is the mayor of Port Royal, a small waterfront enclave in Beaufort County where a developer actually had come in with a plan to build for sale homes. And then, well,
the whole time we were initially discussing it, the only plans that we had seen, the only thing that was ever talked about was single family neighborhood having around 88 to 91 homes, single family homes. But back in August, they came in and showed us this plan, just a picture really of a build to rent neighborhood with over 230 units, the majority of those being townhomes.
And the reason the developer gave for changing the proposal didn't sit well with Phillips.
This developer told us when we were talking, the market's changed. People just don't want to buy houses anymore. I find that really hard to believe. The idea that somehow Americans have just woken up and don't want to own any real estate anymore sounds like something a developer would say.
Port Royal officials are in the process of debating what to do with that particular development plan. All the way upstate, in another tiny enclave called Fountain Inn, Mayor G.P. McClear had two build-to-rent communities pop up where he thought he was going to see homes for sale.
What's a little frustrating as a city is both of those instances. That was not the idea when they were being built.
The developer who had bought the land and had even started building homes for sale sold the site wholesale to a corporate buyer who then built rental home properties. Now, the corporation didn't add any homes to the original build-out plans, but well more than 100 new places for rent showed up where McClear says they had first been okayed as for sale homes.
Out of the blue, someone comes in and buys the entire neighborhood. This is a different product, and it is something cities are trying to figure out how to wrestle with. We don't want to step on property rights. but we want to be sure that the community knows what's coming.
The undercoating of all of this is we're talking about private equity as residential developer, and few things make communities bristle like the words corporate landlord. Kevin Phillips.
Something about these small communities is that they have a uniqueness about them. They have a character about them, a quaintness about them that people enjoy and attracts them. I think the fear is that with a corporate owner landlord coming in is that it kind of loses that uniqueness. And now you've just got anywhere USA, you know, it doesn't look like Port Royal. It just looks like, you know, you could plop you anywhere in America and it looks exactly the same. Just the corporatization of America, which you see in a lot of industries going on.
Blandness and uniformity siphoning local character is one thing. What's really troubling most everyone I spoke with for this story is the fact that nobody really knows where this build-to-rent thing is going. Now, build-to-rent as a business model has been around for a few decades, actually, but this push to build more of these communities in a choked housing market is only a couple of years old, and so very little real-world data exists because there just hasn't been enough time to see many long-term trends or evolving problems. But the worries about what rental-only neighborhoods will do to communities persists because, well, we do know a lot about how big-money private equity investors work.
One of the things that they would like to do is have the highest value so they can borrow that money and, like private equity does, put it into riskier investments that return greater amounts to them using that real estate as leverage.
Jay Reinhardt is the president and CEO of Reinhardt Realty Corp. in Rock Hill.
So if I can go in and I can build a house for $175,000, $200,000, I can rent it for $3,000 a month, I've got good cash flow on that. As a matter of fact, a lender will look at that and go, oh, wow, that house is not worth $200,000 that it cost you to build it. It's worth $250 or $275. So I've got $75 more in equity that I can actually pull out. They say, you can make your payments based on the cash flow of the rents. No problem, and then they can go and invest. So it's in the developer's best interest to get those prices as high as possible.
And what this could translate into is once collecting rents on properties that age too much becomes less profitable, corporate owners would likely sell to another corporate buyer, not to any of the tenants who might have lived in these homes.
Wall Street and private equity is very fickle. The minute the market changes and they can't get those return numbers, then they'll exit.
But all that being said, there is something that no amount of speculative dread has a better answer to.
We need places for people to live. What happens with build to rent is we're providing that opportunity for somebody to have a home in this area that may not be able to find it for purchase because we're just not building them fast enough to purchase. So in, you know, 30,000 foot level, I do think that there is a place for build to rent.
Don Walker agrees with Jay Reinhardt that for the renters who can afford them, build-to-rent homes are fulfilling a critical role right now.
What we found in our latest build-to-rent tenant survey that we did, where we had over 6,000 completed responses from people around the country, was that about 62% of the people that currently live in a build-to-rent community are coming from a different city or state.
What data do exist about build-to-rent communities, John Burns Real Estate Consulting in San Diego has them. Walker is the company's CFO. And he says household income for families in build-to-rent communities usually lands around $100,000 to $150,000 a year.
And so, you know, people might be moving for a job, for instance. They oftentimes want to test out an area first before they decide to buy. And so this gives them a way to test that out without having to commit to and going through all the time and expense of buying a house.
In February, Burns identified 66 active build-to-rent communities in South Carolina with about 8,000 total units. Another four dozen communities are coming soon, without mention of when. But if they get here as planned, the number of homes built for rent in South Carolina will double.
The build-to-rent operators, they're buying land right next to the for sale groups. Right now, that land acquisition activity has slowed down dramatically, and the for sale people are building. But in the long run, I see them building side by side where people want to live.
And although build-to-rent neighborhoods are popping up, whether as a surprise like Fountain Inn experienced or fully anticipated, Walker expects growth in the next year or so to be solid, and then he expects the market will level things out.
You know, we don't have an official forecast on build-to-rent starts, but I would say anecdotally, I think they could be down 50 to 80%.
For perspective, developers built around 87,000 build-to-rent units nationwide in the 12 months leading up to September of 2023. That's according to Burns Research. Historically, the industry has built about 33,000 units a year, at least until this recent boom. And these units are finding renters.
Some people want to rent, and it could be because they don't have a down payment yet. Again, it could be because they're moving to a new area and are testing it out. Or they own their home and they no longer want the financial responsibility or the maintenance of that home.
And Walker says the builders of these housing developments are attentive to the properties in large part because of all the money they put into them.
Building a new house is very expensive. It could easily be $300,000 to $400,000 to buy the land, get it entitled, get it built, and ready for somebody to move into. So you're talking about rounding, you know, a $35 to $50 million investment. It's certainly in their interest to maintain those homes.
No one argues that build-to-rent homes are eyesores. They're too new to be anything but shiny and clean for the most part so far. The concern then really is more of a speculation about where this build-to-rent thing will take cities and communities, given that private equity investment has created major disruptions, to put it politely, in nearly every institution in which it's invested, from ambulance companies and nursing home facilities to newspapers and prisons and housing. And all with little preventative legislation or subsequent action to rein in private equity's worst impulses. That scares people like Kenya Cummings, whose work with tenants frequently involves clients who've run afoul of corporate landlords, which have a powerful lobby here in a state with weak tenant protections and abnormally high eviction rates.
I'm looking at leases that like lay out costs, but then those additional CAM fees start to show up if folks push too much.
Cummings is the director of strategy and planning at the South Carolina Housing Justice Network in North Charleston.
That's a really huge issue that's happening with folks, and it changes even how you're able to budget. So if the apartment was supposed to be $1,500 and the CAM fees fluctuate, some months you're paying $1,600 and sometimes you're paying up to closer to $2,000.
And if you think this kind of dynamic is only for people facing severe housing insecurity due to poverty, Cummings says, think again.
When I started tenant rights work, folks had a very clear image of what they thought like the tenant was who needed more tenant protections, like, oh, a Black family or folks who have been laid off. And I'm having conversations with folks who are working on a PhD, with lawyers, with all kinds of folks who are just impacted by what's happening in the corporate landlord space.
So while build-to-rent neighborhoods offer some measure of release for South Carolina's housing crunch, and while they do serve tenants who want to live in a nice new house while they weigh whether to buy in town a few years on, housing advocates and real estate pros and city planners are keeping a somewhat side eye on how this potentially consequential and emerging type of neighborhood will affect everything, from a person's ability to build wealth through home ownership, to community involvement from tenants, to city services and increased pressure on infrastructure.
Thanks, Scott. You can find that story and so much more original reporting at SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. A.T. Shire, producer of The Lead Pod. I'm glad you're here, too, under somewhat... under duress, I would say, maybe.
I think coming back from duress. Sharp-eared listeners, if you can hear my voice right now, which you can if you're listening to this part, it does sound different, and that's because I am coming out of the haze of war with COVID.
Mm.
Yes. If you go back and you listen to the wind down of the Tuesday pod, that is the sound of a man. He doesn't even know that he's about to get hit by the freight train of COVID that night. I mean, that is hours away from me feeling terrible.
Oh, I'm so glad you finished the pod before it just like hit you.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I can't.
You got to finish your work before you get sick.
So let's run through a timeline here. Okay.
Sure.
So Monday morning, we have a meeting, 9 a.m.
9 a.m.
In which friend of the pod, Mayon Schechter.
This is so good.
Spills her entire coffee on me, I would say at 9:02 a.m.
I'm sitting right there. We're in this meeting. My aunt gets up. The lid to her iced coffee is not secure.
Loose as hell.
All I do is I turn over and you're just sitting there. The coffee's all over your leg. You're not a coffee guy. Didn't hit your shoes. That was exciting for you. You were worried about the shoes.
I had nice shoes on.
And like, we're just like, I can't control my laughter. Mayan is like mortified. You're just sitting there in like moisture.
I didn't flinch. You just sat there. I'm very proud of that. Okay. So that is at 9:02 a.m.
Yes.
Not to mention that it was daylight savings time.
Daylight savings. A lot of things happened. Saving.
We sprung forward there. And so that morning I was like, man, allergies are bad. Daylight saving time. We sprung forward. I lost an hour. So I'm just like,
you had a long weekend
tired.
Too.
Yeah, exactly. So, but who knows? Who knows? Was I feeling that? We know now in hindsight I was not. So I didn't feel great there. We record the show. I feel like my energy was high. High T.
Yeah,
for the
very
show.
High T. Very high T.
And then when I got home, I was sitting on the couch. I had socks on. I had sweatpants on. I had a sweatshirt on. I had our electric fireplace on.
I was like, was the fire going?
The fire was going. And I was shivering. Uh-huh. And I look at Caitlin. I go, do we have a COVID test? And she goes, yeah, they're expired. I go, Leah, give it to me anyway. When I tell you this expired COVID test, it went positive in less than 15 seconds. I spun that nose swab in and I saw the liquid flood the test strip and
it
immediately goes. And I was like, well, babe, I guess I'm going to be moving into the basement.
To test positive.
I've been subterranean basement dwelling since that moment.
Wow.
So I'm pretty upset. So last weekend, I was in Charlotte. I went to
good
two
Charlotte.
Between two good Charlotte.
Good Charlotte.
I went to two Between the Buried and Me concerts, very heavy metal concerts. And I got to say, we stood at the output of a 2,000 BTU fan the first night.
Oh, my God.
Where I was like,
super spreading.
COVID couldn't touch me if it wanted to. I actually made that joke to my friend Kelly.
Oh, here we go. Origin story.
Kiss of death, okay? And I am the only one of six people that I spent 72 straight hours with to get sick. And I'm not saying I'm upset. I'm very happy that my
pregnant
wife...
You're a martyr. We get it. You're a martyr.
My pregnant wife did not get it.
Yes,
she actually
is
gone.
Safe.
The baby is safe, the child, very well. It is on its way to New Jersey, to the New Jersey baby shower right now. So after I stop talking here, I get to go upstairs for the first time all week.
This is so exciting.
And so that night, I was pretty crushed. I did not feel good. So I've been in the basement. I've been spending time with all the other producers of the show, my cats.
Yes.
They've been taking turns coming down and checking on my welfare. Reggie's here right now.
A lot of
Parmigiano
notes.
Reggiano.
A lot yes. of notes.
And they have like, a lot of. They've done. They're the only ones who've taken the survey.
They're like, more cat jokes, please. We're like, I don't know, guys. That's not really
yeah,
in our wheelhouse.
We need more, not enough yarn balls on
Perhaps
the podcast.
Maybe we can make digs about birds more often.
Yes. But enough about me, Gavin. You did say to me at the start of this, when I was blaming daylight saving on this, you said you prefer falling back.
I do. Springing forward is hard.
That. Spring forward is the better time. This is the time that it should always be.
I get more messed up springing forward, I think. Or maybe I'm just like lulled into a false sense of security with the falling back and it's like luxury.
I think it's the other way.
I don't really know until like 2 weeks out after the fact. But you do. I mean, I was driving. Like, there are studies that show how things go crazy after the switch.
There are studies.
And
there
I'm just like,
studies.
You just got to give people more grace. You got to give them more following distance because everyone is like keyed up.
Yes.
And you just got to be aware of that because it takes
like
a while
a
for everyone.
Moon.
Yeah, it's like a super moon times two.
Yes.
So, yeah, be aware of that. Be aware of the Ides of March. Clearly, we are into them. AT's been a victim of them.
I've been stabbed in the back so many times. On that, let's stab this pod. Let's
okay,
end it for the weekend,
one,
okay? My ears have popped for the first time, and it was a relief that I cannot explain. Anyway, Gavin, please do the credits.
If you
stab the show, let it die, please.
Well, we love hearing from everybody. Even though we didn't have a phone call in the wind down, we did hear from AT Shire. We're happy to hear from him. But you can leave us a message so we don't have to listen to so much AT at 803-563-7169. If you don't want to do that, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That's awesome, too. And you can always stay up to date with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Billion-dollar House-approved budget. Who's that?
It's Reggie.
Oh, look at that cat!
Look at this thing. Look at the size
look
of this
Look at this thing. You can't buy that. You can't buy this size.
He's beautiful. What can I say? My boy's beautiful.
He's such a beautiful boy.
I love my boy. He's beautiful. Okay, but House-approved budget.